The title of Brother Frank's third class is Fit for Destruction. The introductory reading was Isaiah chapter 2. Brother Frank.
Well, brothers and sisters, I hope you're still with me. This is like reading one of those snippets files. There's just so much information that you go on staggering with it all. But anyway, this particular class, Fit for Destruction, will have a little bit of review in it in the beginning, which is always helpful when there's a lot of information, just to review a little bit. It'll add a little bit of information. And we'll go on to describe a couple new things. So Israel's ungodliness, we did mention that, and that God will do this in the judgments that are coming upon the people of Israel themselves. We certainly will see God's judgments upon Russia, and particularly their covetous spirit. We'll see that God's his wrath will certainly go on Europe, and not just looking at the anti-Semitism that is now, but which has been going on there for many years, and also the great tribulation and trouble they caused the Ecclesia at various times in history. We want to look at the Vatican's wickedness. We want to look at society's violent ways. We want to look at mankind's immoral lifestyle. And then finally, just to cement Isaiah chapter 2 into this, is his work against human pride and arrogance. Now, if people really believed that God was the creator of this world and he was the sustainer of life, a lot of this problem would not occur. But when people become godless and they just don't have any rules that are governing them, then you can see all these things: ungodliness, covetousness, anti-Semitism, wickedness, etc. It just all naturally flows because it comes out of the carnal, fleshly mind of man. That's where it comes from. And even we ourselves know that many of the thoughts that occur to us are not thoughts coming from our study of the scriptures. They're coming from the heart of man, which is desperately wicked. And we've got to know how to control that. So when we see God finally judging him in pride and arrogance, it's because God is the creator. He is our potter. He is shaping us. And as a potter has control over the clay, so God takes control over his creation, and he will eventually produce what he wanted to do with this earth and mankind upon it. So it tells us that the ungodliness will be removed from Israel, because it says in Romans chapter 11, "So shall all Israel be saved. As it is written, there shall come out of Zion the deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. For this is my covenant unto them, when I shall take away their sins." So this idea that we've done it our way, we can defend ourselves, we can, we've tested these things, and just look out for our ability, is what God will deal with. And you can see in this was one of the remarkable things associated with God, or with Israel's development of defenses, this Iron Dome missile launcher. So Jerusalem will fall again. Yes, we read this verse in Zechariah chapter 14, verses 1 and 3. This has not happened yet. And so all the focus on this city of Jerusalem and all the things that the people are doing there, well, you can just imagine when the earthquake goes through and divides the Mount of Olives, that there's not going to be much left of it just from that alone. But then shall Yahweh go forth, fight against those nations as he went and fought in the day of battle. Means nothing to people who don't know their Bible. But to people who know their Bible and know how God fought in the day of battle, it must be obviously enough to take any nation into subjection. So he says, yes, Israel will repent. Zechariah 12, verses 9 and 10. It shall come to pass in that day I will seek to destroy all the nations that came or come against Jerusalem. And I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplications. They shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son. And they shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. So the spirit that has guided them to design and operate Yad Vashem in Israel. This is our history. This is what happened to us. No mention of God is something that God's going to deal with. And finally, they will turn around. And of all the things that God's going to judge, this has got a good ending. Because these people come out of it as being now blessed by God to be the people that will work for him in the kingdom age. And God will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. But he's got to destroy that arrogant spirit that we've done it our way, and, you know, for the next 50 to 100 years, look at what more we will be able to do. And this is the great transformation that God says to all the nations that hate Israel. And in Zechariah chapter 8, many people and strong nations shall come to seek Yahweh of hosts in Jerusalem and to pray before Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold of all languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. So, you see, God is the one that's elevated in all these prophecies. The nations look at Israel and they don't say, oh, what a wonderful nation this is. Look at how smart these people are. Look at what they've done for society. No, God's, they will say, we're going to go with you because we've heard that God is with you. Just like the nations, like in Jericho, when Rahab said, we heard what you did, or what your God did for you in Egypt, bringing you through the Red Sea. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that we believe would happen out of what God's going to do with Israel. So how God does that and how he brings this will be just so wonderful to see, if we live to see it. Moving on to Russia and their covetousness. So God says, you'll do this to a point. You come down to Israel to a point. And at that time, when that point's reached, you know, all these people drawing red lines. You know, God doesn't mention a red line, but not much difference with the idea. It'll come to pass at the same time when Gog will come against the land of Israel, saith the Lord Yahweh. My fury will come up in my face, for in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath have I spoken. Surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel. And you, in your, you know, we've been reading this through Exodus, and we see the children of Israel coming to the Mount Sinai, and we see the mount on fire and the trembling and the voice of God speaking and the trumpet waxing louder and louder. And boy, the people backed off. They didn't want that anymore. Can you imagine what people will think when they see God's wrath poured out, as they will see in those days? Russia looks forward to graves in Israel. That's what they portray to the world. Look at us. Look at how strong our arms are for the work we want to do. But the prophecy says you're going to get graves in Israel. So he says, I will turn thee back and leave the sixth part of thee, that's the King James, and will cause thee to come up from the north parts, and will bring thee upon the mountains of Israel, and I will smite thy bow out of thy left hand, and I will cause thine arrows to fall out of thy right hand. So he made a point of this. And it's interesting that the King James has said there would be a sixth part of them left. If you check the ESV and other translations, it doesn't mention that. It translates it differently. I will turn you about and drive you forward and bring you up from the uttermost parts of the earth and lead you against the mountains of Israel. There's nothing in there about leaving any part of that nation, or of that, not the nation, but of the army that comes up into Israel. And I will strike your bow from your left hand. I will make your arrows drop out of your right hand. So God has written that for 2,500 years, being left in the prophetic record for people to see how God would deal with this invasion. They will be disarmed. And what else will they get? Well, it shall come to pass on that day that I will give unto Gog a place there of graves in Israel, the valley of the passengers on the east of the sea, and it shall stop the noses of the passengers. Now, you can see that's not in the original. So what should be in the original? Well, just wait a second. We'll finish this and go on to the ESV. They shall bury Gog and all his multitude, and they shall call it the valley of Haman Gog. And 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying of them. Now, that's kind of an interesting lead, isn't it? Because it doesn't speak of, you know, a whole bunch of robots from Russia coming down, which some people like to think that there'll be a robotic war in the years to come, or that it would be done by missiles coming in and just, you know, knocking out what they want to knock out. There's got to be people, thousands of people. 7 months they're going to be in burying all these people that die, that come up against Israel. So that would imply a massive invasion of people, whether the warriors come down from, it's like being paratrooped in, whether they just come in mass as they could from ships that come up in the Mediterranean and land on the shore and bring the troops in that way. There's got to be a massive invasion of people into Israel. The ESV doesn't mention it will stop their noses. You see, this would imply, and I guess this is what the translators saw in it, there can't be that many people, there can be 7 months and burying them. Can you imagine the stench that would come up until they get them buried? Now, but the ESV says, on that day I will give to Gog a place for burial in Israel, the valley of the travelers on the east of the sea. It will block the travelers, for there Gog and all his multitude will be buried. It will be called the Valley of Haman Gog. For 7 months, the house of Israel will be burying them in order to cleanse the land. So if you go and read Henry Sully's vision of the temple to be built and of how this would be fulfilled, he says, well, when people come up to worship in Jerusalem, they would have to pass this place. If they pass the place where Gog is buried, and however that's memorialized, whether there is a monument there, whether there is, you know, a marker of some sort, we don't know. But it would seem to be a means of humbling the people. Like, God's done this in so many interesting episodes in Israel. The people weren't ready to meet Jesus, so God sent John the Baptist. And John the Baptist prepared the way of Yahweh. He made the rough places plain. He made the mountains and hills low. He exalted the valleys. He made the crooked straight and the rough places plain, because that was necessary for what God was going to do. And I would think for the people that come up to worship in the temple, that's such a holy environment at the temple. They will need to have their minds conditioned. And seeing this monument to Gog and his multitude would block them in the sense that they can't just run up there, but it's not stop their noses. Other translations have stopped their mouths, which if something like that is in the original, then that may be better, but it certainly will block them in some way or another. Yeah, don't meddle with Jerusalem. That's God's warning to the nations. As he says in chapter 12 of Zechariah, behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all the people round about, when they shall be in the siege of both against Judah and Jerusalem. And that day I will make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces. All these nations want a part. Catholics want their holy sites. The Muslims want their holy sites. The Greek Catholics want their holy sites. The Russians want their holy sites. The Jews want their holy sites. Well, if they really took this to heart, I will make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people, they'd probably stay away. But people don't read the Bible. Brothers and sisters, do your readings. We can't survive this ourselves if we're not reading the Bible. One of the most wonderful heritages that were ever given to us as Christadelphians was the Bible reading planner, where if you follow that and you just discipline yourself to do those readings, you would remember these things because year after year you are reviewing them. And that's, I believe, what God intended us to do, to review them and review them and review them. So they're in our heads. And it's just a wonderful thing when you're making a talk to be able to connect these things. This idea that you can do it with a computer by looking at the word in the English or the word in the Greek or the Hebrew is one way to do it, but it's not the way that really leads you to truth entirely, because many of these things are just, oh, I remember something like that. It's probably a figurative use of the word, but there is the link. And I think we've got to continue to read the word and don't allow this idea of watching to be the way we do things, just looking at pictures and, you know, trying to make it out of that. Look at this. It's kind of interesting. I mean, this is just typical. You have to be really watching the news to pick up something like this, because it's there once, maybe on the news, and you never see it again. Russia moves in as USA moves out, from the National Post. This is in Canada, December 18th. With the Palestinians rejecting U.S. mediation, Russia said it was ready to take over. Russia's deputy UN ambassador, Vladimir Safronikov, said the issue of moving as quickly as possible toward direct Israeli-Palestinian negotiations is becoming more important. And he reiterated Russia's proposal to hold a summit between the Palestinian and Israel leaders. We are ready to become an honest mediator here, he said. And if you read this little notation under this picture, here's a couple of the Russian Federation people talking together. And he speaks with a co-worker after the vote on a draft resolution that would reject U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel on December 18, 2017 at the UN headquarters. See, it just seems to be it's coming so fast now that it's just hard to keep up. Like, well, all the other things we got to do, you just tend to miss this. And if you start missing it, you give up. Like, you say, well, you know, I just can't keep up, and you back off. Now, you really need to try to not back off. There's another source of information coming out of Australia, where there's a brother who produces something like the snippet file. It's much shorter. It's not as good, but it does keep you up to date with about a tenth of the time taken to read it. So there are other ways in which we can try to keep current if we need to. Europe's anti-Semitism. Now, I think Micah chapter 4, like Micah chapter 4 in the first few verses, this is the same as Isaiah chapter 2, so it's really significant. And it talks about the kingdom being set up, nations coming to Jerusalem, the fact that Jesus will judge the people, that he will rebuke nations far off. They will beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. All that's there in the first part of Micah, as it is in. But then Micah goes on to say, now many nations are gathered against thee that say, let her be defiled, let her eye look upon Zion. And if you look at UNESCO, which is United Nations, as we mentioned to you, it's the body that controls education, that's the spirit of it. They just would love to embarrass Israel. Let her eye look upon Zion. They want to show to the world that Israel can't look after the holy sites. So that idea of them closing the doors of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre was all set up to embarrass Israel. Israel wisely, very quickly backed off from the law so that they could survive what otherwise would have been an onslaught against them. But these nations don't know the thoughts of Yahweh. Neither did they understand his counsel. He'll gather them as sheaves into the floor. Arise and thresh, O daughter of Zion. I will make thy horn iron. I'll make thy hoofs brass. Thou shalt beat in pieces many people, and I will consecrate their gain unto Yahweh and their substance unto the whole of the Lord of the whole earth. That's how God will deal with these people. So Europe is to be the subject of God's wrath, because it says he will send a fire upon Magog. I think I got that to come up. Well, Magog is a bit like Gomer. They got Magog over here. Russia would be further with the Scythians, Gomer here, but these nations were intermingled and we're just not too sure where they would be. So he says in Ezekiel 39, verse 6, I will send a fire on Magog and upon them that dwell carelessly in the isles, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. And it's typical of what Peter says in the New Testament when he says, the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with great noise, the elements shall melt with fervent heat, the earth and also the works that are in them shall be burned up. Well, so some people have concluded the earth's going to be burned up. Maybe that's why we should look for some other solar body up there or some other body that we can all escape to, like, you know, the science fiction of children's books. If they only read the chapter, the sense in which the ideas will be burned up is the same sense in which God overthrew the world in Noah's day by water. The world survived. The earth survived. Life survived. It was in the ark. God made the earth to be inhabited. He's not going to be frustrated in that. So what's going to be burned up is the works of men that are defiling God's earth. He's going to destroy them that are destroying the earth. But civilization is going to go on because the earth God has given to the children of men. And the earth abides forever, he tells us. But this judgment of fire on particular parts for people who know not God and people who have challenged him with his people Israel, that's where his judgments will fall. So again, we look at this idea of anti-Semitism. And we look at it from this perspective this time. That remembering this prophecy, which was in Jeremiah 16, you see, you would expect to see these things in a Holocaust memorial. If these people really understood their history, they would show that the prophet said this would happen. Instead, what you see at Yad Vashem, you see a cattle car. Yeah, that's the cattle car, one of the cattle cars that the Jews were herded into and taken to these death camps and destroyed like they were animals. Well, it did say, I will send many fishers, they shall fish them. And after I will send many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain and from every hill. They were treating people like animals. For mine eyes are upon all their ways. They are not hid from my face, neither is their iniquity hid from mine eyes. That's what God is waiting for the Jews to recognize, that those judgments of history have to be rightly interpreted. They're not just what they've endured so that they might gain the sympathy of the nations. They endured them because of what God said would happen to them for their ungodliness. But here's the great monument to men. Isn't it interesting? Why would they ever fashion it after the Tower of Babel? You know, here is the European Union, Tower of Babel. Why would you want to do that? Would any of them have known the story of the Tower of Babel and what it really meant? I'm sure you wouldn't know what to pattern it after. All these nations were driven away. Multiple languages. They're bringing them all back. All the languages united as one. That's the spirit of it. And so we see Europe at this final stage as toes of iron and clay. Now, isn't it interesting just to ponder this? I'm not saying this is necessarily the only interpretation, but ponder this. Because that's the only part of the image where there's two materials found. As you go down the image and you come to the clay. And the iron is not unique. Clay is, but not the iron. The iron is coming from an age of iron legs, the iron of Rome. What is still Roman in today's world? Roman Catholic Church. It has the name Rome right in it. It's all over the place. But in Europe, it hasn't got the strength it used to have. You just look at the statistics on how many people are still Christians in Europe and how many Muslims are coming in and taking over. And so you see an aspect of iron and clay. So if people of Europe came together, it wouldn't have the same strength as it had in the days of the iron legs because of the clay element. And so he says, they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. In the days of these kings, the God of heaven shall set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Now, brothers and sisters, I hope you see what I'm leading you up to. If you haven't pondered the question yet, what do we do about this? We've seen all this material. We can't really deny that a lot of this is happening before our eyes, so, this is what's happening. But But doing something about it is quite different. Changing your life because of this. See what you might do to further prepare. Are we really ready? That's the subject of Are You Ready? Our fifth class. So when we leave our class, this third class, I don't want you to think that this subject is over. It isn't. It's just that we've only got that far in it. So, yes, we're going to see the image destroyed. We're going to see these people that have risen up. We're not going to be submitting to God. The Tower of Babel, we'll make it again. And we'll show God that we can withstand him. We can bring all the nations back together that spoke these different languages. And they'll be united together. What an arrogant spirit. And you can see how our God must feel about it. Now, that's one of the things that we should be feeling, brothers and sisters. If we lay claim to be the students of the book in this particular age and generation, then we've got to see the Spirit of God in this. Why would God do this? Why is he saying this? It's because he's the potter. And this is the clay talking to the powder. I'm going to be what I want to be. No, you can't say that to God the potter. I want to go on to the Vatican's wickedness. Some people today don't see it that way anymore. You have a look at some of the pioneers of the Protestant Reformation and see what they had to say about the Vatican at that time and about Roman Catholicism. And so people have got weak, so they don't even know that this is speaking about this people anymore. They just gone silent against this. And because our voice is silent, people don't even know about it. But our students that have come before us have been able to show that this prophecy is speaking about the papacy. That's a study in itself on 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. The mystery of iniquity doth already work in the times of the apostle who was writing this. Only he who now letteth will let until he taketh him out of the way. Then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth. Can you see this? It started already in the time of the writer, and it would continue until Jesus consumes it with the brightness of his coming. That's something it had to last from the time of the apostles to our present day. You tell me one thing that's lasted that long. That bears the characteristics that he speaks of in other verses. There's only one, Roman Catholic Church. We've got to be clear on that. We've got to be certain on that. That's what he's speaking about. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with power and signs and lying wonders. Brothers and sisters, if we're right on what happens to a person when he's dead, the Catholics are wrong. And if they're wrong and what they say what happens to a person, like they did with the Pope when the Pope died, they said he's gone to heaven. He's now being received by all the Catholics in heaven as he walks down and receives their applause as he comes into heaven. This was what he was trying to tell the Catholics. We don't believe that. These are lying wonders. There's nothing like that in the world apart from the Catholic Church. And so we got to be strong on these things and know what we believe on them. There it is. Paul and I visited this place not so long ago and never looked anything like this. They must have cleaned it up a lot because this was all really filthy. I never saw so many pigeons in all my life that were in here around these things. They're flying up in clouds, the pigeons. But now they've really fixed it up because they got under the idea. They want visitors. They want to be known. Why would the Vatican, that hasn't got a soldier that could go out and win anything, ever be known and recognized by the world body? I mean, that's one of the things that people still sort of, every now and then you see it in an editorial. Who are these people? Why would we listen to what the Pope has to say? Well, Revelation 17 says, "And there come one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying, Come hither, I will show thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication." Don't be embarrassed by the scriptures, brothers and sisters. If it uses language, which we may be a little bit embarrassed sometimes, don't be embarrassed. God used the language first, because he wanted to show how bad their sin really is. So he says that this power will oppose and exalt himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now remember having a discussion with a brother who said, you got the wrong people. It is not the Catholic Church. And the whole thing depended upon this word, temple. He says, you show me one place where the Catholics refer to any one of their places of worship as a temple. So Brother Paul and I went to the Vatican. We walked through the Vatican, and as you go in the doors, there's all kinds of writing on the floor, but it's in Latin. Not ever understood or ever took a course in Latin, so we really couldn't understand it. But there was a couple of words there that tweaked our interest, and we were going on and intended to come back. And when we came back the next time, we looked at it and found out that what it was saying was something you wouldn't expect to find. I don't think there's anything like this in your hall here that says, look at how big we made our hall. You see, this is how far Book Road comes, the only come. And we got a bigger hall. Can you imagine anything so silly? That's what that line said. It was trying to show how big the Vatican, that big building where they worship in, the Basilica, was compared to other churches that had been built. The whole idea to prove it was bigger. I mean, that's got no association with God. You can't imagine it. But this is what he's saying here. I followed this up. I investigated everything I could find in this. I was reading as much as I could read. And then I listened to what the papacy does when they make a person a saint. And the papacy is such that they read these things. They don't allow a pope just to make it up as you go on, although this present pope has made up a few things that I don't think the Catholics really appreciated him saying. But normally they read it. And in that, when they make a person a saint, they refer to that building as a temple. And I thought, that's all I needed to see, because this is about lying ideas that were convincing people of, sort of convincing people that this person really was important and we should listen to him. No, it was a lying wonder. A lying wonder in the sense that it was certainly false, that the Pope wasn't in heaven. People that are saints are not in heaven. They can't hear anybody praying to them. But all this is claimed by the... See, you really need to invest in that. You need to have a lecture sometime where a brother in the ecclesia takes this subject on and makes something of it, just to keep familiar with this subject. This is current prophecy. It's just as current as Russia and Israel is, to know what God's going to do with this, with these people. There's so much written about it. It says, whom the Lord will consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. So if we're looking for the coming of the Lord, we need to be looking at the Catholic Church. Well, I'll tell you, there's a few things that I noticed here. First of all, if you read what happened to ancient Babylon, it said, would never be rebuilt, right? When it went down, it was gone. Who tried to rebuild it? Saddam Hussein. He was the one who was going to rebuild it. He had all the bricks there with his name on them. He was building this. He got quite a ways on building it. And the Americans, for some reason, decided they had to take out Iraq. Whether there was weapons of mass destruction there or not, I think they were performing God's work on the side. God said this would never happen. He was going to make it happen. God ensured it did not happen. And it didn't happen. Because this Babylon will, like the old Babylon, go down and never happen again. It'll be gone, finished. That's God's judgment on it. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death, mourning, and famine. She shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. And the kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they see the smoke of her burning. Why are all the nations going to visit the Pope? Why is it so important for them that they have the Pope on their side? That's an interesting question. Bible prophecy tells us why. And this is how the Vatican views what's happening in Jerusalem. So this came out of the this came out of, let me see, it's one of the snippets. I don't know exactly what he has a certain code here for where it came from. But anyway, it's about the Vatican. The Vatican says Jerusalem, which is a major holy city for the Muslims, Christians, and Jews, should be granted a special status where people of all religions can worship freely. Thus, it is opposed to the city becoming exclusively a Jewish entity where Muslims and Christians are left to the whims of the Jews. That's the Pope. No wonder he, in all the his dealings with Israel and his dealings with nations that are wrestling with the Jews, is for the city of Jerusalem having an international status. They don't want it to be the Israeli capital. They don't want it to be the capital of the Palestinians either. They want it to be an international city where people can have control of it. So it's just an interesting struggle that's going on there. And this is what's being said. Now, I picked this one up. I don't know if you saw this, whether it was even in the papers in the U.S. But this is December 8, 2017. And suddenly, one night it said, it has been a question of theological debate and liturgical interpretation for years. So I didn't know that, but I learned it in this one night. And now Pope Francis has joined the discussion. Does the Lord's Prayer, Christendom's resonant petition to the Almighty, need an update? This is the Pope. Hey, this man's supposed to speak without air. He's the only man in the world that claims the Catholic Church that have this ability. So in a new television interview, Pope Francis said, the common rendering of the one line of the prayer, the Lord's Prayer, lead us not into temptation, was not a good translation from ancient texts. Do not let us fall into temptation, he suggested, might be better, because God does not lead people into temptation, Satan does. Now, I thought that was really kind of interesting. So, you know, Christadelphia, just look into this a little bit. Do you agree with the Pope? Do you think the translation needs an update? Because it is temptation. Do you think that Jesus got it wrong? You see what this man is saying? Do you see the power he takes on himself? So he told TV 2000 channel, it is not a good translation because it speaks of a God who induces temptation. He added, I am the one who falls. It's not him pushing me into temptation to then see how I have fallen. A father doesn't do that. A father helps you get up immediately. It's Satan who leads us into temptation. That's his department. I like that one. The 80-year-old also highlighted that the Catholic Church in France had adapted the prayer and uses the phrase, do not let us fall into temptation instead. Now, brothers and sisters, what do you think? If you look up this word, temptation, and the word really is lead, see, that's the word he's working on. But you got to look at this temptation. Does God lead us into temptation? Well, it does say God tempted Abraham, but it also says God doesn't tempt any man and can himself be tempted. But that same word deals for testing and trying and temptation in an evil sense. The same word in the Hebrew. You really can't solve it from that puzzle. So you have to go through examples and to see whether God does try us. Well, God obviously tried Abraham. It says the Spirit led Jesus into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. So was that the work of God? Was that the work of the Spirit? Or didn't that really happen? You see the sense of what he's investigating here. So Francis has called for the English wording of the Lord's Prayer to be changed because it implies God induces temptation. So the Catholic Church has been at this now for how many hundred years? And in 2017 decided that maybe the Lord's Prayer needs an update. There's something we got to look at. Here's another one. The Vatican knows China is good for business. From the milestone snippets, and I think that came up February 18th or February 21st this year. So as a spiritual enterprise, organized religion is all about numbers. And 1.37 billion souls to be saved on the mainland it's no surprise relations with Beijing are warming. A delegation from Beijing is expected to travel to the Vatican in March to finalize a deal on the appointment of Catholic bishops in mainland China. That's been a dispute with them. The Catholics want to appoint who they want to appoint, and China wants to appoint who they want to appoint. They couldn't agree on who to appoint for bishops in China. So they think now they've got an agreement, and Vatican's really happy about this. Organized religion is in the spiritual business, and like any business, it's ultimately about numbers. Now, if you were the chief executive officer, or rather the Pope in Rome, surveying the state of your global Catholic business in terms of customer base, what do you see? And it goes on to describe how it's declining in Europe, it's declining in North America, it's growing in Asia, and it's growing in China. So the Catholic Church is very interested in China at the present. There's nothing in the Bible that suggests that I know of that China's going to be any great factor. It may be a factor, but not a factor that God has specifically pointed out. He's mainly interested where the Jews have gone and where Christians have gone in his judgments. Now, I'd like to look at the clock a little bit, so we'll be on time, I think. Matthew 24, talking about society's violent ways. Now, you know this. The Christadelphians know this up and down. But at the days of Noah, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered in the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. So Jesus particularly warns the reader to compare the days of Noah with the days of his coming. We would be unwise to not do that. When you look at the violence, you get a lot of pictures on the internet. In fact, it seems that the media is obsessed with violence. We turn on our radios in the morning at 7 o'clock to get 7 o'clock news, and almost always it's who died overnight being shot. Who died, found murdered, they don't know how it happened. How many car accidents happened and people got killed? How many places in the world did people get? Like, it's about violence, violence, violence. That's what they seem to think people want to hear and what they need to know. And so we hear that over the good things that they could report. So pictures just follow it along. And you see these acts of violence. But the prophet said, proclaim this among the Gentiles. Prepare war. Wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords, your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. You don't see that on the United Nations. You see Isaiah 2 on the United Nations, which is the reverse of this. But this has to happen first. So this great battle of Armageddon will be because these nations have been preparing war. Well, are they preparing war? Well, just look at how much money they're spending. I have no idea to account for this chart that I got. Didn't have anything for 1991. I can't imagine the world didn't spend anything. It just must have been a layer in the chart. The world military expenditure, year by year. And so last year, and this would have been 2016, $1.5 trillion on the preparations for war. And what makes it so expensive is the weapons to have superiority cost a lot of money. And hence, their preoccupation is they've got to spend that money on those weapons so other things can't be done. We need the money for weapons. This country outspends any other nation on preparation for war. Any other nation in the world is way in the pack compared to the United States. Canada, I don't know where they do spend any money. They have a few old ships out there. I remember they were sending a ship to go to rescue somebody halfway around the world, and before they got out of that harbor in Halifax, one of the helicopters had crashed on the deck, and he had to come back and call the mission off. That's Canada's Navy. I don't mind that, but that's the condition of Canada. You don't have any protection from the North, I can tell you that. Earth filled with violence, that's how God saw it. Like, these are the other things he said about the days of Noah. You would see that. The earth was filled with violence. All flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence. God has the right to say that. He created it. He's the potter. I don't want this vessel any longer. It's violence. That's not what I wanted. And so God's going to deal with that violence. But this idea of the weak saying, I am strong, that's a sad picture. Here, this little kid needs to be in his home, being loved by his mom and his dad, being raised up to manhood. Instead, his father's behind him, promoting him to strap one of these explosive belts on and go out and kill as many people as he can. That's wickedness. You can see how God would be so upset with the violence in this world when it manifests itself like that. Let the weak say, I am strong. The violence in society to cease? Yes, because this is the answer. And this is what people need to hear. That the Lord will judge among many people, rebuke strong nations afar off. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. And you know, if tomorrow all the nations of the world decided we're not manufacturing any weapons of war anymore, that's it, it's over. So many people would be unemployed, the nation would fall apart. There wouldn't be any tax base for people. There's so many millions and millions of people employed in the production of weapons. But they will sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid. The mouth of Yahweh of hosts has spoken this. His immoral lifestyle, as you know, it's compared to the days of Lot and the days of Sodom. Immorality will vanish. And all these things, they love making these little diagrams of various words of all the afflictions that people have. But that's got to be a part of this age, not of the age to come. In Jude 1, we see the judgment of the Lord coming with 10,000s of his saints upon ungodliness, 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 ungodliness. That's what God's coming to judge. This immorality that stands up and challenges God. This work of terror. You may have read this, that this WannaCry malware attack, which is affecting hospitals, businesses, and banks across the world earlier this year, and they figured that it cost billions of dollars of damage, was a work of North Korea and some of the evil that comes from that particular part of the world. Now, Canada is doing its part. We've never seen a prime minister like this. I think his father, if you remember, Pierre Elliott Trudeau was his father. Well, this is Justin Trudeau, and he's making it a point in front of the Canadian people to show how he's following his father's footsteps. His father was the one who championed the Bill of Rights and made it, put it in the Constitution of Canada. So all these freedoms of people. So we took this out of the news, and it says, this is the devastating story of people who were branded criminals by the government, people who lost their livelihoods, and in some cases their lives. Trudeau said Tuesday as he delivered a speech building up to his promised apology for past state-sanctioned discrimination against members of the LGBTQ community in Canada. And they took a picture of him actually crying in Parliament as he's making this. No, he may have been genuine in what he was doing. But of all the other problems that are facing the world, you sort of wonder why that is made a priority with our government. But we'll work on that one. I think you have enough problems here. We'll give you another one to work on. And this is another one that Canada's into. And I think some places in the States is into it too. They want to legalize marijuana. Now, they know the problems associated with this, but again, it's this present prime minister wants to make sure this happens. So the federal government's plans to legalize marijuana by next summer, that's this summer, is a step closer. Bill C-45 received final approval Monday in the House of Commons, passing by a vote of 200-82. It now moves to the Senate, where conservative senators are threatening to hold up the passage of the bill. But it won't matter, it'll pass. Because that's just the spirit of the nation. And You know, what happened with cigarettes will happen with marijuana, until if time went on, they would probably realize maybe that wasn't a very good decision. They should know that now, but they do it anyway. And this is what, I don't know how it afflicts you in your country, but it is really a problem for Canadians. It says Statistics Canada divided up Canadian households into five groups. At the bottom of the pile, amongst the households with the least amount of money to spend, people owed $3.33 in debt for every dollar available. A little deep in debt. On the opposite end of the spectrum, among the households with the most disposable income, the number was 1.28 per dollar available. So even the rich people are in debt. And we're encouraged every day to buy things that we can't pay for. You'll pay for them next year. Or buy for it on time. Or they're giving us money that you don't really have, but you know, they don't tell you just exactly how you're going to pay for it, but you just know you're going to. So that's a real problem in Canada. And I just wanted to do this as my last point on this problem of human pride and arrogance. We read this in Isaiah chapter 2. The loftiness of man will be bowed down. The haughtiness of men shall be made low. Yahweh alone shall be exalted in that day. I just can't underestimate what he's saying there. That's the way it will be. God alone will be exalted in that day. There won't be any strong men. But that's what they want to be. Now that, to my mind, was near insane. Why would you ever want to take your car and launch it into space and put it in orbit of Mars, which, you understand, it didn't actually go into the orbit around Mars, so it's going to be out in the asteroid belt somewhere. That, to my mind, is the pride of mankind manifested today. Look at what I can do. All the world will see what I can do. It'll be all the TV screens everywhere. See how important I am. That's what God's going to abase. So he says, the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down. The Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. And in the the seventh verse, the loftiness of men shall be bowed down. The haughtiness of men shall be made low. You can see that God's really emphasizing that in Isaiah chapter 2, a great chapter for the problems of our day. So he has signs and the sun and the moon and the stars. They're all the time reporting on things that they can see with their telescopes and how they try to figure out, you know, how the first star originated and how stars are dying and how stars are born. But I had to admit just last week, that the earth is, or the universe is expanding much faster than they ever thought of, and they got to now refigure their estimate of why this was happening. They can't really understand why it's happening. So it just seems to me that all these things are very much before our faces in today's world. Men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming upon the earth. The powers of heaven shall be shaken. As it was in the days of Lot, Toronto has an awful Pride Day. They take it right around in front of the Church Street Hall in Toronto. So the brothers and sisters don't want to go. They don't. They close the meeting off that day. It comes right in front of their hall. And what you see in there is you don't want the brothers and sisters seeing. So they mass out there, taking this symbol that God made so beautiful and used it to try to illustrate, we'll tell God, we'll show him what we can do. So God says, even thus, or Jesus says, even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. And we're certainly seeing the repeats of those days. Now, I just want to, two little items. I got a couple minutes. Two little items. Do you know that airport? That's Atlanta. It's acknowledged to be the busiest airport in the world. You can see with the number of landing strips it is. Do you think that going to and fro in the last days would be something that speaks to what we're doing today? That people are traveling? How many people go to work driving an hour one way, coming back, spend so much time on the road? Do you think that's making any difference to us as Christadelphians? Because many people should run to and fro. I definitely think it is. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the word, seal the book even to the time of the end. many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. We have never, ever seen it this way before in history. Okay, it just gets more and more that way as time goes on. But all those 2,500 years the prophecy was written, never saw it like this in our day. Knowledge shall be increased. Well, if you wonder where things go when they go to the cloud from your computer, they go to a room like that, which is packed full of computers that can store immense amounts of information. And it's just having an amazing impact upon people. Like, people now are starting to look at the psychological backlash to having so much information to deal with, and reporting the sicknesses that people are coming up with and how people just can't comprehend all that. But he did say knowledge would be increased. We have never, ever seen a day like this in history. It's our day. And this blows me away when you see this, that human knowledge doubles every 13 months. All the knowledge that people have had and recorded is doubling at that rate. Every 13 months, it's doubled. Another 13 months, it's doubled. But look at what they say. In our experience over 25 years, we've found it's the inspired people, the passionate people that build companies, that advance organizations, that innovate and drive progress, sales, marketing, and improve the production. It's our mission to be part of this. Here's some of the interesting information that might inspire you. Buckminster Fuller noticed that until 1990, human knowledge doubled approximately every 100 years. By the end of World War II, knowledge was doubling every 25 years. Today, average human knowledge is doubling every 13 months. According to IBM, human knowledge will one day double every 12 hours. This has some big implications for organizations that want to thrive in 2016. Can you imagine all the knowledge that men have ever achieved, written down and recorded, could double in 12 hours, every 12 hours? Like, how do people ever keep track of this? Can you see all of these things, brothers and sisters, coming together at once? Hold on to your faith. We've got to hold on to what we believe. We have still every reason in the world to believe that what God has said is what we need to know. Much of this information just tells you where we are with the world, but we don't really need to know that. We do need to know what's in that book. So tomorrow, we'll try to give you a little bit more of what's in the book and not focus on this. Thank you.